Welcome into the Sports Objective right here on a Tuesday evening or whenever you're listening to it. Hey, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, what's up, dude?
Come on, Dave. I am a very sleepy Kyle from LaGrange tonight. I'm going to
All
try to
right.
stay awake. I'm going to rely on Corey and his entertainment to keep me going during this podcast.
We definitely can do that. I know that's why we had him on. We knew we had a premonition that you would be tired. And I said, on a Tuesday night, who can we get? We got Corey Glore. I knew that last week it was going to happen. I need to play the lottery. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, man?
Just finishing up supper, a little chicken casserole, and looking forward to talking Pirate baseball.
Some Chick-fil-A, a Bojangles.
A chicken casserole, Dave. Chicken
I
casserole.
took
I
the
know that.
I took the kids to Chick-fil-A because they don't like the chicken casserole. We had a rotisserie chicken 2 nights ago, and then what was left, Stacy used that to make the chicken casserole.
All right, we're gonna have some recipes here with Corey Glore.
But Dave, if Bubba had Cheez-Its, he wouldn't have had to have chicken casserole.
There you go. All right, Corey Glore, the play-by-play voice of the
Inside
ECU
joke.
Baseball Pirates. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I somehow avoided chicken tonight, but that appears to be an every night thing with the Rosenbaum household.
What did you have for dinner, Corey?
I had a little bit of salmon tonight, and yeah, I went classy tonight.
Salmon, you
there
know,
you
I grew up eating salmon out of a can. My mama would make salmon patties. You ever had that,
Wow.
Corey?
I have had where is it? I think Publix sells like salmon burgers at their seafood counter, and I've had those before, but that's kind of the extent of the salmon patty I've had.
Okay, you got to find some. You got to find some older Southern woman to make you some salmon
All right, here, let me write this down.
Hey, Corey, you need to, while you're at it, you need to find out what chicken mole is.
Hey, Kyle, my mother-in-law's offended right now.
Yeah, well, your mother-in-law, Stacy. Well, Stacy's mom has got it going on. So, but anyway, I'm sure. Thank you. If anybody can do the salmon patties, it would be Stacy's mom.
But since you brought up salmon patties, it's funny. My 6-year-old Reese, you know, she won't eat spaghetti. She won't eat mac and cheese, but she'll eat salmon patties and okra.
Yeah, well,
what
she's
is
Southern.
That child? Sorry, that was an involuntary reaction.
Yeah.
I apologize to you and to Reese, but that's insane.
Bubba,
yeah,
I remember now you telling me that Reese loves salmon patties. How did you say that?
So, Corey, we were going to have you on for baseball, but I think we'll just talk recipes and what you ate tonight and what
you made some
tomorrow.
Stromboli last weekend. It was great. Like, I mean,
what
we
kind of Stromboli did you make?
I had some. It was some pepperoni, some salami, and a cheese blend, some mozzarella and pepper jack combined in there. My mom makes Stromboli pretty decently, and so I demanded a recipe from her, and I found out how easy it was. So
now, if you go to a restaurant in Eastern North Carolina, at least around this part of Eastern North Carolina, Kinston, Goldsboro, and you order a Stromboli, it's a glorified calzone.
Yeah.
What is an Illinois Stromboli?
And to be honest, it's kind of the same thing. It's just longer. It's more of a bread loaf, and then you chop it up into various slices.
Sounds good.
Various slices is a term I just use. I played bass for them in college.
Awesome.
We're having a segment now at home with Corey Glore.
I know, right? I mean, we already talked before air. I talked about how I switched positions for joining you. I'm on my couch tonight instead of at my table. Like, I mean, if you guys want to talk baseball, then I'm just going to leave.
Yeah, it's almost like the season was canceled or something.
We're working our way up to it.
Wow, Dave. It's still a little too soon, isn't it, Dave?
Okay. All right. No, I mean,
actually, it's not. It's really not. It's been over.
We got a comment here. It's a smiley face.
Yeah, Brenda Shapiro. I guess that was about Stacy's mom.
Well, look, don't just say Brenda Shapiro. Like, Shapiro doesn't matter. A comment from Shapiro is important. That's one of my favorite dudes right there. I love Brendan.
He's a cool
Brendan,
dude, yeah. All right, let's talk baseball. This podcast is off to a wonderful start. Corey, we had, obviously, media day yesterday. We wanted to have you on to talk about, reflect about fall ball some more, and obviously we're very excited. I was telling Corey, guys, before the show started, the weather's so great out right now. We could just think about baseball, and that'll make us happy versus the dreary weather that we've had here recently.
I'm trying to think, it was a few days ago. I was able to get out to the park over the weekend and the weather was pretty good and they were even out there practicing. And I was like, all right, yeah, here we are. Like we're a month away. It's starting to feel like it again. And then this week has hit. And it's like, oh yeah, actually a month away. This feels right. Like this is like, you're going to have weather like this to start the year for sure. And media day creeping in on us yesterday in a very different format. I mean, it's here. We're getting down to it. Even if right now you walk outside and it feels nothing like it.
One thing I'm excited about with the season, Corey, is I was told, but before the show, we were texting back and forth, getting ready. I'm just really happy with the depth this year. I mean, the depth on this team is, I wanted to ask you, you've been here since 2016. Is this the most deep team that you've seen for Cliff?
For sure. And, you know, the 2019 group could give it probably a run for its money. I would even say the 2017 team, the year after the Lubbock Super Regional trip, that was a really deep club. But that was deep with, you know, half the club was guys that you thought would be good, but they were new. They were freshmen. And then 2019 were those guys as upperclassmen. This blend that you have for 2021, you know pretty much what you're going to get of a lot of these guys. And we've seen them now. And now with everyone getting an additional year and the draft being shorter, this team is more loaded than you thought it was going to be if 2020 was a normal campaign and everything was just status quo. So you have a weekend rotation on paper that is arguably the best in the conference and is going to be one of the top 20 or so in the country if it does what they should be able to do. You have a lineup that really showed what they're capable of in their abbreviated time last year that all by and large is back. The only guy that really isn't back is Alec Burleson. And then you have a bullpen that you can throw 5-6 guys out to close out a game and they all can do it. And you can all trust them to do it. So they're, you know, in years past, you could look at an ECU team and say they're going to bash their way to a win. And we saw that play out for a couple of years. This year's team, if all goes according to what I think they're capable of, they can win by 2-1 games. They can win by 9-5 games, and they have the horses to do every single element of that. So that's why the fact that you can look at this roster and you can be just kind of mouth agape as to how deep it is, that's something that people should really be excited about.
Yeah, Corey, last year, the beginning of last year, you know, you had the defense and the pitching was really doing it. And then the bats started to come along right when things were getting shut down. That Charlotte series, a lot of guys were swinging the bats well. And then, of course, things got shut down after that UNC Wilmington loss.
Yeah, and you know, I thought it did take the offense a little bit to figure itself out last year, and I think everyone figured that would be the case. And then it started to, then everything came to a halt. Now you have all those guys knowing what they can do, feeling more comfortable in their roles, where, you know, your middle infield was brand new in terms of starting. You were trying to figure out what you were doing at the corners, and that was starting to get solidified. And then the outfield was getting a little bit rotated. And then everything stopped. Now, by and large, you kind of have an idea of who will be where to begin this year. And all of them showed how they could succeed there last year. So it's different because these guys now have the experience and now they have a year of conditioning under their belt and knowing what they're trying to do and trying to be and trying to be leaders of this team and not just figure out who they are as a ball player. That you have a group that, you know, even though we saw them only 17 times last year, they grew up together very quickly. And so you have a team that is experienced more so than people realize for 2021.
Corey, we have a question from Brent. Speaking of Brennan Shapiro, he had a question for you. Corey, how did the bats look this year? Do you think we will have good hitting to complement our pitching? What he's asking.
Yeah, I think I do. I think the pitching will be the strength. And so there will be nights, I think, where the bats will be a little bit lacking and a little bit inconsistent. But I think what you saw from guys like Connor Norby last year, you saw Bryson Worrell kind of round into what we thought he could be. I think the fact that they're finding a place in a couple places to put Thomas Francisco is telling, because his bat is too good. And that also speaks to what they think of the depth they might have at first base in a guy like Josh Moylan, one of the newcomers coming in, who's a huge individual. And when he gets a hold of one, it's a hold of one. I think you have two catchers to keep an eye on too, Seth Cadell and Ben Newton, who started coming on at the end of last season, the JUCO transfer. Those two can provide a really good 1-2 punch behind the plate. So yeah, I do think this offense can match what this pitching can do. I don't know if it will look like the home run hitting offense we saw from a few years ago, when you had Bryant Packard and Spencer Brickhouse and Jake Washer in the middle of that lineup. I think they may not have the full home run capability if we saw that team, but I think their ability to get on base up and down, and we haven't talked about a guy like Lane Hoover getting on at the top of the order, their ability to get on base, wreak some havoc, use some of their speed at the bottom of the order as well, and create runs, I think is going to be pretty hard to stop.
That was one of the things that I wanted to talk about. So a nice segue there is how good Cliff is with as far as managing the game. With he can create runs so many different ways, and he gets guys that are tremendous athletes, and with the bunting and things that you wouldn't think is sexy, he can turn that into all of a sudden there's another run and another run. There's another run or two added to the score that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't have the 2020 final numbers in front of me, but they were in the leading the pace in terms of putting bunts in play for a second year in a row across the country. 2019, they scored a ton of runs, and they also led the country in bunts in play, whether it was sacrifices, squeezes, bunting for base hits, whatever the case might be. It's an element of the game that this team and this program still treats very seriously in a time when a lot of teams are trying to shy away from that. And you see why, with kind of how they recruit, and especially when you look at the roster this year and you see a good number of guys who are a little bit positionless. They can go a couple places. And I think this year, Thomas Francisco will be kind of in the spotlight when it comes to that term. Alec Makarevich is another guy to keep an eye on with that, that they're very high on. They have guys that can kind of do a lot of different things. Alec Burleson was the obvious one of the last couple years, and that's because they want to create the best athletes and for what they're trying to build here. And, you know, at times it will be small ball. At times it will be squeezing in a run. At times it will be bunting runners over. And everyone on that team is aware of that. Everyone's bought into that. So the fact that you have a lot of different ways that this lineup can manufacture runs is going to be key. And the fact they have a lot of different guys that can do it, especially this year, is going to be key, because you just do not know what the team will look like on any given day with the time of with what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, talk about sticking a needle in somebody's balloon, you know, figuratively speaking, when you have those bunts being laid down, and then all of a sudden you have a three-run homer or a grand slam. And that's just – talk about deflating. When you know, that's the first ball that's been hit out of the infield. That's certainly demoralizing to a team.
Yeah, it's pretty common now. It's balancing the numbers game, where is there a better probability of scoring a run with a runner on first and nobody out, or a runner on second and one out? And that's now the conversation. Every coach now has a little bit of a different philosophy on it. For this team, it depends on where they are in the order, certainly, but they'll lean more to getting the runner to second, especially if it's earlier in a game or if they're chasing in a game. And then the fact that this team does have the ability to just hammer one out, wherever a runner is in front of them, that is, you're right, that is a punch to the gut for a lot of pitchers and a lot of teams. And we've seen that play out over the last couple of years. Even the Bash Brother team of 2019 just bunted a ton, and it would just absolutely ring a pitcher out and ring a team's will out. So playing this team when this offense is going can be a little bit like being killed by paper cuts. And it's a joy to watch if you're part of this team, and it can be a little bit painful to be a part of if you're not.
Corey, since you brought up AMAC, come very quickly, Kyle. AMAC, he played a significant amount last year and did nice things. But Cliff Godwin, his comments yesterday at ECU Baseball's virtual media day really jumped out to me. All the guys that he's coached in this program, guys like Turner Brown, Charlie Yorgan, and Eric Tyler, guys that you knew really maximized their opportunities in practice because of the type of players they were. He said AMAC, that being Alec Makarevich, that he maximized his opportunities in practice more than any of them.
And you were playing along with Cliff there for a second, Bubba. You were trying to not say his last name, weren't you? You were trying not to. Say it with me, Makarevich. You had it right. You had it right. He has been kind of that guy that has caught the coach's eyes in practice, where he has gone out there and every little play that seems innocuous, it means a lot to him, and he is working on what he is and refining on what he is. I think the difference with him, as opposed to some of the guys you just mentioned, is this is a bigger guy who comes in with some good size. He's 6'1". He has some power in that bat of his, and he is a switch hitter. And so he can kind of do a lot of different things. He can be the utility knife of this team. And you heard them kind of allude to it yesterday in media day. This year, you just do not know when suddenly you're going to lose, the left side of your infield, hypothetically, because of contact tracing, because of who knows what. And you're going to need someone to step in. And that's where a guy like Alec Makarevich, who can play infield, who can play outfield, will be extremely valuable, because you can put him in a lot of different spots and they're confident in him to succeed there and not just pick up the slack, but maybe even do a little bit better. So this is where a lot has gone into building this team for this year, both good and bad. The fact that this team is as deep as maybe it's ever been, certainly under Coach Godwin, and heading into a year where you just don't know where suddenly your depth is going to be tested the next day. This can set up really well for the Pirates if they're able to get through this season, like we all kind of hope that they will right now, is get through this season, get as many games down as possible, because they're built to withstand randomness. They're built to withstand something coming out of the blue here.
Yes, Makarevich has the Macarena as his walk-up music. He'll be my new favorite player.
I'll let him know.
Yeah.
Wow.
That just, hey, Makarevich. I mean, that's just beautiful.
Wow.
Corey,
He's been waiting for like 10 minutes to do that. Wow.
Yeah, been waiting for a year to probably do that, actually.
Well, you take it as it comes. Speaking of the nonsense that is COVID-19 and 2021 and all that, and contact tracing and all that good stuff. How weird is it going to be for you calling a game with very few fans in Clark LeClaire? I know you're just going to be glad to call it again in Clark LeClaire. And how do you think it's going to affect the team? I was kind of thinking of it kind of in a positive way, whereas, you're used to the raucous crowds at Clark LeClaire, and then you got to go play at, say, Memphis or Cincinnati, where there's little to nobody there. It may kind of equal out where you get used to playing in front of no fans.
Yeah, I think it will be an adjustment for the team. I don't think it will be a big one, because you're right, where when they go on the road, there aren't a ton of places in which they're sitting in front of, whether it's the quantity of fans that come in at Clark LeClaire or certainly the quality of what they do. You don't get that a ton on the road. You'll get some volatility at places like Houston. You'll get it at Tulane. I mean, they'll go to Houston this year. They don't go to Tulane this year. But and then when you go to places like Carolina, NC State, if they were on the schedule, Wilmington, certainly those are slightly different environments. But by and large, I think these guys will be able to adjust to that pretty quickly. I like to think I would too. It will be strange where I have to kind of jack up the crowd mic that I have sticking out the booth because there's no crowd to really speak of. Just the parents are allowed. And I think another thing, everyone's figuring out who's going to be able to go in and how many around the conference and around the country right now. When the Pirates go on the road, there usually is a good road contingent, whether that's a midweek trip or whether, you know, families are flying to conference weekends. So whether or not they're allowed to even come into those, I don't know. But I don't think this team will have too big of an adjustment to worry about when it comes to lack of fans here to start the year. I might have a bigger one than they will. Because when once they start going, once they start playing, then they start playing, and they're playing the game. So they'll get past it pretty quickly, I feel.
Yeah, with vaccines and all coming out, who knows? Maybe by
the
end of the year, maybe we'll have fans.
And I think that's the hope for everybody within the program, within the school here, is that if things keep trending the way that they are, and we can get more shots in arms going and get people vaccinated, then the gates can open back up. But right now, that's just not the case, and I'm not surprised at that. I mean, I kind of figured that's where we were heading back in, you know, December with where we were. So hopefully that can change, and hopefully we can get more people in the kind of the back stretch of the year. But right now, I'll happily bring it to you.
Corey, are you going to be calling the games on the radio network only, or ESPN Plus also, or what?
I am radio only. I will be as many as they have, as many as I can do because, you know, you just don't know. I'll be on the radio network. So you'll have to tune into me the old fashioned way.
Corey, go ahead, Kyle.
No, I'll say that's interesting with the video going to ESPN Plus now. You
know, well,
we're used to having Corey call both.
Part of the contract with ESPN is to have a separate broadcast crew. And so that is part of the deal. And so with my contract's with Learfield and with radio. So I'm sticking with that here for baseball. And that's something that I like being the voice of this team. And so that is something that I'm more than okay with.
Okay.
Corey, while you're sticking with radio, before I get to one of our viewers' questions, another viewer, Johnny Gardner, I know he wanted me to ask this in a recent interview on Pirate Radio. I'm trying to remember if it was Coach Godwin or who it was, but whatever the case, they were talking about just how with everything going on and so many sports being played this spring, not every game will be on ESPN Plus, but those that are not on ESPN Plus, will those be able to be broadcast on ecupirates.com so we can have a way to watch Pirate baseball, or will we just have to – we'll be forced to listen to you?
Well, when you put it that nicely, Bubba.
Exactly.
I think this is something that we were kind of discussing off-air, so I'll just kind of say it now as well. There are a lot of things still being worked out about how, frankly, my setup, where I'll be in that press box, you know, how the broadcast will sound. A lot of things are still in flux right now, including that side of things. I don't know what the number of games will be that they'll put on ESPN Plus for baseball. I'm outside of those conversations, and I don't know what the plan is if there are games that are not on ESPN Plus. That is all being stuff where a lot of people are coming together in some capacity to discuss a plan of attack there. So stay tuned. I don't have a firm answer on that yet. I can tell you here's what I know. I will be on the radio. And so that's all I really got locked in stone for you right now.
Well, I can tell you this. We had two basketball games, you remember, that were not carried on ESPN Plus, and they were streamed directly on ecupirates.com.
Yeah. I can't imagine that not being the case. And you can tell I'm rusty that we went through a 17-game season, because obviously those games that are, unless something has changed, those ecupirates.com productions, Corey and Coach O are the ones providing the audio anyway. So that's the best of both worlds.
Oh, well, thank you. And
nice save, Bubba. Nice save.
I mean, and that was prior to the ESPN deal starting, and so now the school has put a ton of resources into the ESPN stuff, and so again, I don't know what the plan of attack is on their part of how many will be on ESPN, how many won't be. But I know they're working on it, and they're aware that you all are wondering that as well about how many will be on ESPN. So that they are putting something together, and they'll announce something certainly by opening day about when things will be on ESPN, when they won't be.
There'll be a few games on Superstation WTBS, right?
Yes, WGN America. Yes, on WGN Superstation.
I can tell you guys this much right now. With no fan attendance allowed except for family, if we don't have video available for every game the way we have in the past, be it on ESPN Plus or ECUPirates.com or a combination of both, this year of all years, you're going to have Pirate fans raising immortal hell. So somebody better get it done.
I'll see what I can do. Thank you.
I mean, the very fact that we have radio and then you have our buddy.
Well, I'm just telling you. Well, Corey does the video for ECUPirates.com. So, look, I'm the ESPN Plus. I don't even, you put them all on ECUPirates.com. I don't even care about them being on ESPN Plus. I mean, it is what it is. But, you can't go to the game. So we're going to have video. So whoever's in charge of that, get it done.
Kind of like the UCLA folks a few years ago. But anyway, it was only a big series.
John Packard coming through. John Packard coming through in the clutch for y'all back here.
Yeah, that's, yep.
I don't know if John will be allowed in this year if games aren't televised. He might be able to sneak in. He's a legacy. He's a legacy parent.
I'm sure Bubba will sneak in, so he'll have you won't get in trouble with your Bubba with the video.
Yeah.
Yeah, not at all.
Anyway, yeah. Moving on.
Hey, Dave, you know Malcolm will be on that in about 5 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
Malcolm is Bubba. Yeah. I don't think he'd mind at all.
Malcolm did just hear like a dog whistle go off, and it's like someone's talking about recording.
This team, though, the thing that I hate so much, Corey, is this team I felt like is really special. When I looked at, I didn't realize how deep this team was until recently looking at the roster, and you start rattling off names after name after name, especially the pitching is what I've been really happy with. Usually we have a deep at other positions, but as far as pitching, that's what I think that has been, I don't think the word lacking is the right word. I think that would be way too strong, but I think with the experience, maybe that's the word I'm looking for. The experience that this team has, the number of guys that you could have as a starter, it plays in nicely for the very fact what you were talking about earlier, when you got some guys that we'll talk about that in just a second, but if a guy has COVID or contact tracing is probably the worst thing that could happen when they don't have COVID, but they're around somebody that did have COVID. But you've got what, 5, 6, 7 guys that can start a game somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah.
And Coach Godwin dropped a couple of names yesterday at media day as to who, like, hey, these guys could potentially be starting pitchers, maybe to start the year, maybe if they need to come in and fill a void. But when you have you have kind of your three horses out in front with Gavin Williams, Tyler Smith, Jake Kuchmaner, you kind of anticipate that would be the weekend rotation to start, and then you have the two guys that Cliff Godwin mentioned yesterday, Carson Wisenhunt, Carter Spivey, and I saw them both in the fall. They both looked really sharp, and then CJ Mayhew's name came up, who we saw as a swingman in his freshman year last year. And then he said Cam Colmore could be a guy who they're trying to stretch out a little bit. And so what they're building there is they realize they have the depth now in the bullpen. And now they can try and build out more starters out of the groups that they have. Because, I mean, you kind of alluded to it, but, you think back to the 2019 team that won a regional. You had the starting pitching, and you had a couple of guys in the bullpen that you could go to for outs. Here you have 6 or 7 in the bullpen right now that you can truly just say, go finish the game for us, and they can do it. And that's not even including some of one or two of the guys who are new to the team this year, who are now fighting to find a spot because of how deep this team is that they walked into. And that allows them the opportunity to breed guys into starting pitching. And then once they hit conference play, and that question was kind of dodged a little bit yesterday in media day, and I understand why, but you're going to have 4 games in 3 days, and you will need a lot more pitching to get through those weekends somewhat unscathed. So to start off this season, to get as much going in the starting rotation as you can, and as many pitchers going as you can, they can lean on to get you 5, 6, 7 innings. That is going to pay off huge once conference play starts.
No doubt about
it. Yeah, while we're on the pitching staff, very quickly, Dave, you know, you're talking about Carson Wisenhunt. I heard Coach Godwin yesterday just talking about how he matured and just grown up and how he understands everything that goes into it and what he needs to do now as a baseball player at this level.
Yeah, I disappeared on you there for a second. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, you're right. He kind of has the early award in my head of guys who have really changed what they were heading into their 2020 season and what they are now. They've taken him essentially taken the bat out of his hands, and now they've made him a pitcher. And I remember walking in fall for the Purple Gold World Series, and that was the talk, was watch Carson Wisenhunt and watch what he's capable of doing. He's touching 95 with a fastball here after working almost solely on pitching since the end of last year. So this guy is going to be good, really good. And the fact that now he's focusing solely in on pitching, I think you're going to see some of those dividends pay off here this year pretty early.
And you're talking about experienced guys like Cam Colmore and Matt Bridges. Colmore last year in 17 games for the team, that is. I think he appeared in at least 9 or 10, maybe more. And you know, opponents were hitting just 105 against him.
What's great about what Cam does is not only is he has taken essentially the mantle of being the leader of this pitching staff. He and Bridges and Smith, the three returning seniors. But what he is a pitcher is so unique. It might not seem like it when you watch him, but everything moves when he throws. His fastball has sink to it and has run on their arm side. He's got a really good slider that he's worked in now, and he drops his arm down a lot. And I mentioned that a lot in the broadcast, and in fact, the Colmores have made fun of me for that at times. But when he changes how he throws, where he throws from, he adds almost an entirely new arsenal to what he does. And so that makes him that much harder to figure out. So the fact that he has molded into what he is now, which is not just, you know, a veteran, a guy who's been around for a while that has seen it all, that is pitched in, you know, that's pitched on super regional teams and all that, that's a local guy, but now he's showing it with what he does on the hill as well. And he is one of the best options for this team back end of the bullpen. If they want him to start things off as well, he's now the guy that can start doing that. So what he has transformed into over his heading into his sixth year is really, really impressive to see.
No question about it. You talk about impressive. We were talking about the lineup. It just seems like that there's so many players. Like you look around and you say, with this guy, you look at a Ryder Giles. I mean, he can play a whole bunch of positions. And I know that our good friend Brendan Shapiro put two-way you as one of his comments on Facebook while we're doing the broadcast. And it just amazes me. I mean, you're lucky to have one guy, but it looks like this team once again has a handful of guys that's amazing, that can play so many positions on the field, and that's going to play it. That'll be nicely, not only for COVID, but I think I'm thinking long-term with regional, super regional, potentially Omaha. If you have guys who can move around and do that, it'll be really nice.
And that's by design. I mean, this team now does, it's not like they seek out guys who they believe that they can do this. Like, they don't want to have a team of 35 solely of, you know, hey, you can throw and you can hit. Like, that's, they're not doing that. But to bring in 3, 4, 5 guys that have the capability and the flexibility of doing that, they're getting the most out of who they recruit and the talent that they're looking to get. And that's what they've been able to do over the last 3-4 years of recruiting cycles, and you know, they had a couple when they walked in here, when they started off here at ECU. I think, you know, like Reed Love was kind of a guy that did that, and then Kirk Morgan became that, and now that it is a point of focus for this group to, all right, we don't have to necessarily corner this guy into one spot or one role. If he can throw, let's give it a shot. I mean, all these guys pitch and hit in high school. I mean, that's just a matter of fact. If you get JUCO guys, some of them will skew to one thing or the other, but you're recruiting guys who've done it all. And so, you know, some fit into one spot, others aren't necessarily able to be put into a box. And a guy like Ryder Giles is the example of that, who they didn't think they were going to throw heading into his freshman year. And then he's thrown opening day and he hasn't stopped throwing. So they just find a way to kind of get a little bit more out of guys when they're looking for them. And that's something that's hard to do.
Now, Corey, I know this was the year before you got there, because this was Paul Roper that would have been on the call, but in the conference championship game, I guess I'm pretty sure it's when he hit it. Luke Bolka hit the one off the Tiki Hut out in left field, yeah. down in Clearwater.
Yeah, and he was a pitcher, right, heading in. And then the only times I saw him, he was just a big old bat off the bench. Like, I mean, it's and guys change. We just talked about Carson Wisenhunt. Like, he was, you know, he was brought in kind of as one of those two-way guys, and now they've shifted him to the mound because they believe that's where they can get the best out of him, and that's where he can be his best. And I think you're going to see that here in 2021. So this team's also, they're not stubborn with what guys are capable of doing, and they can put Thomas Francisco in the outfield, like what we're going to see this year for some of these games. And he's open to it. And the team says, all right, let's give you a shot in left field, because they know how valuable he is and what his ability is. And they're finding a way to mine that out of him at a spot that, you know, if first base is as crowded as it looks, we have to keep Francisco in. So let's find him a spot to play him. And that's what they're doing. And he's taking to it. And now he's an all conference preseason member in the outfield because of it. So this team just has the ability, this program has the ability of of bringing in guys that they know would be open. And that's kind of the mantra of ECU baseball right now.
Hey, Corey, several minutes ago you referenced Josh Moylan and everything he brings to the table with that raw power. Alan Powell chimes in, better known as Pirate Al, saying, talking about Josh Moylan, his physical attributes look a lot like Brickhouse with the wind blowing out of left field. A lot of games I love to have his power with that left-handed bat in the lineup. So if you would, talk a little bit more about Josh.
Yeah, let me pull up his digits here. I got the roster right now. When I saw him in fall ball, I was kind of aghast at the size of the freshman. He's a freshman, is 6'4", 224. He's a Maryland kid, and he has ties to Jeff Palumbo. He was at the high school that Jeff's brother coaches at, and so that kind of gave ECU a little bit of a glimpse as to what he is. He's a horse of a human, and Pirate Allen is right. He does have a brick house mold about him. I saw Spencer at fall ball, and he kind of was like, he's a little bit bigger than me. Like, I mean, he's a freshman. So, I mean, even if the wind's blowing in from right, like it probably will to start the year as it does when it's cold here, I don't think it will be too much of an issue for him. I'll say that, because he has that type of just raw, pure strength that he could very quickly become. You put him in the middle of the order with a Bryson Wuerl, with a Seth Cadell, and you're looking at a pretty formidable power trio right there in the heart.
No question about it. When it's all said and done with the schedule, what do you think about I know Rhode Island is penciled in right now.
In ink, so they're coming, all right? They're in ink. They're okay. Coming. Fingers crossed.
What stands out for you for the season? I know that one of the things that we were talking about earlier that stands out, obviously, is the having more conference games, having four conference games for a quote-unquote weekend series versus the normal three-game series.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be – I mean, to a certain extent, I don't think it's going to be the big deal unless we're really injured. Maybe that comes to mind. But as far as our talent. We have the talent to do what, you know, what we need to do.
Yeah, this team's deep enough to get through four game weekends. That I don't think is any worry, any concern for what they can do conference play. It will be the unknown. It will be the unpredictable of suddenly you lose three out of the bullpen because of COVID and contact trading. And frankly, I know the conference is still working on, and the NCAA, like, I haven't seen anything yet about what's the minimum number of healthy people you need on a roster. Like that's still being put together. So not knowing a lot of what the structure will be as to what's the cutoff of what you need. You know, we just saw this play out with basketball where you need at least eight off the list. And we saw that come into play with ECU here recently. That hasn't been out for baseball yet, at least that I've seen. So not knowing just what might be coming your way, that's the whole deal this season. I mean, the fact that you don't have as many midweeks is unfortunate. It's not unexpected. The fact that you're able to get a couple of good weekend non-conference teams to come in to try and make up for that void. Illinois State's a really good get to come in down here. That's a very good team out of the Missouri Valley. St. John's coming in is not a bad get either. And I think the other thing to focus on, you know, we talked about bumping up the number of games in conference play, Dave, and it was a reason for that, not just because of the weirdness of COVID affecting this schedule, but also the fact that UConn's not in the league anymore, and that it's an RPI hit. That's a big one for the American. And so the fact that you're going to play more interconference games to try and boost the league in totality, that's going to be key this year. And I say that not knowing how the selection committee will be changing any of their metrics yet. We don't know if they will for this tournament. We got to get there first. The fact that they've restructured conference play the way they have is not surprising. It is done not just for COVID reasons, but to try and make up for losing UConn, in my mind, and EC is well equipped to handle it all. I like the fact that that they're going to get Duke home and home. I like the fact they get North Carolina home and home. That stretch of games where you have St. John's, North Carolina leading in to the first weekend of conference play at home against Cincinnati, and then you're at home the next weekend. Who knows, by the end of the March, maybe there will be people that can be able to come into those games by then. Maybe, fingers crossed, wear a mask. But the fact that you have a pretty big home stretch right entering conference play, the Pirates can make some hay there and also make some damage in the process.
No question about it. The Pirates are looking really good, and certainly the
Did Kyle fall asleep, Dave?
It's down to you and me. It's a gamer survivor, so
yeah. Bubba disappeared. He's trying to force feed his kids spaghetti, and Kyle has passed out. So it's just you and snoring.
I think the record right now is Kyle has snored three times on the show. So
he has actually fallen asleep on this show.
Yes, three times, I think.
I could be mean and ask you who the guests were, but I won't.
They were good guests. That was just, he was sitting on his bed, and next thing he knew, he woke up and he's like, oh my God, did I snore on the show? So anyway, that's a whole other show, as they say. But anyway, one question I have before you go, we've kept you so long, but I was really upset before, speaking of pre-show. I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but I was really upset.
Our pre-shows are great. Carry on.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very upset to see that nobody was picked for the Hall of Fame. And I think that's terrible for baseball. I don't like it. I'm not a big fan. I love Cooperstown, love the mystique. But, I mean, I know it's the first time since 2013, but there are players out there deserving to get in. And, you know, I'm not saying that everybody has to get in. It's not one of those Hall of Fames, but at the same time, to not have anybody, come on now. I mean, that's my two cents. I'm sure you disagree with me, but I just don't like the.
No, I don't. I mean, baseball has a lot of issues. Major League Baseball and the kind of the old guard that still is part of the sport. And I'm not saying it's time to get young blood in everywhere there, because you know the legacy, the history of Major League Baseball is a very key part of that league. But there's a lot of sanctimony that exists still around predominantly baseball writers, which they vote on the Hall of Fame, and it's why we're 0-4 this year. And the people who are in charge of Major League Baseball don't necessarily kowtow to them. I just don't know if they really care. And so there are so many problems with how Major League Baseball is set up. Today's just another sprinkle on the sundae as to the issues that exist and the disconnect that kind of exists between fans like us of the sport and the people who have some say in the sport. So yes, people deserve to get in this year. You can argue till we pass out like Kyle just did about whether or not Kurt Schilling should have gotten 16 more votes, just because he has been quite a presence here of late since leaving the sport. We could argue about Barry Bonds and all those guys for the end of time. The people who are in charge of those decisions are not listening to what we would have to say. And so until things change with how Hall of Fame's voted on, until baseball as a whole realizes just how far it's starting to dwindle on the consciousness of people and how frustrated people are with what's going on right now with Major League Baseball, you're going to have nights like this, and you're going to have just, hey, spring training's supposed to start in like 3 weeks. Have you told anybody what's happening yet? Is the NL have a DH yet? Anyone going to inform them of that? Anyone? It's amazing. It's amazing to see what the backslide has been from those at the highest levels of baseball. And it hurts college baseball because they shorten the draft to 5 rounds, like what we see. And kids don't get the opportunities that they deserve to try and make a living doing this. And yeah, college baseball is going to get some fruits out of this with having the deepest season they'll ever have. But in the end, it's not a good thing to have what's happening right now in Major League Baseball and them trying to control college baseball, them winning and controlling minor league baseball. It's a mess, and it's a shame because all of us here love this sport and love Major League Baseball in some capacity, even though we love college baseball. So to see what's happening is just frustrating. And tonight was another example of it.
What about labor talks? Do you think we're going to have trouble with that moving forward?
You want a hot take? This is usually not. Yes, I mean, I don't come to bear hot takes. I come to be a wonderful guest on your program. I'm going to put a Stephen A. Smith hat on right now. I hope there's a stoppage. I hope the players stand firm here about how much they're getting just crushed right now by revenue sharing, by owners cutting back salaries, but opening billion-dollar television networks and getting public money to build new ballparks like we just saw in Texas or like we saw in Atlanta. The players need a backbone coming up because there is a lot that is wrong, and they have the power to fix it if they actually stand together, which is an issue with baseball players association and most players associations. A lot needs to be fixed, and the only way to do that in my mind right now, unfortunately, is to withhold your work. And so we'll see how this season plays out. No one knows what this season's going to look like. We haven't been told. We don't know when it's starting. And then once the season ends, I hope there's a real galvanization here of the players of why are you cutting our payrolls when you just started your brand new television network? You have a new TV deal coming up. Why can't Shelby Miller find a deal, like that sort of deal? Like there are a lot of things that need fixing, and I think there's only one way to actually fix it, and that might be to break it more.
And what about another question for you? Obviously, being big, all three of us big baseball fans, and the guy, the producer and co-host of the show, Bubba Rosenbaum, is a big Braves fan. Want to ask him about Hank Aaron. What do you think about it? That was a huge loss for us. not only baseball, but just our society, period.
Well, and you're talking to a diehard Brewers fan, and I wasn't around for him as a Brewer, but I mean, he is, he's a Brave, but he is just as much a part of Milwaukee for a lot of baseball fans, and certainly me, as he was for Atlanta. I mean, it's just, that's crushing. Like, I mean, you're just now finding out stories about, you know, you kind of knew the things that he went through as he was a player, but it didn't get the publicity because of how he responded to it all. And someone pointed out, I think it was an article, I don't think it was The Athletic, I think it was somewhere else, but they pointed out, you know, he's getting commended for being kind of a quiet fighter when it comes to racial injustice in baseball, when in reality he was kind of forced to be quiet because of the environment he was in. When in reality, he was speaking pretty loudly, and a lot of people just were ignoring him. He's an absolutely unreplaceable icon in baseball and sport. If you are lucky enough to go to a game in Milwaukee, there is a plaque in the middle of the parking lot right in front of the front gate of now American Family Field of where his final home run ball landed. And people just sit there and they're tailgating around it. And it's just a little piece of history right there. And next time I go, I'm going to find it for sure.
Yeah, Corey. Dave, just very quickly, as far as what Corey's saying with the Milwaukee ties, not only did he play his final 2 years there, but you know, he played 23 years in the big leagues, and then 14 of those were in Milwaukee because of the Braves moved to Atlanta.
So that's why you're hearing so much from Atlanta, because he spent, I mean, that's where he hit 755. And I mean, that's where he became the legend that he was. And, you know, and he dealt with, you know, the same type of things that Jackie Robinson dealt with as he was chasing that home run record. And he certainly heard from it when he was in Atlanta, but it's brutal. I mean, today's the anniversary of Kobe Bryant's death. Yeah. I mean, it's just like these things, just, you know, losing a guy like Hank Aaron is rough. It's really, really. And then on top of it, not having anyone elected to join him in the Hall of Fame today is another little special bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. We're going to definitely have you back, my friend, the season starting February 19th, so somewhere around there in the next few weeks. Love to have you back. And
it's starting. I promise it's starting.
We live in a world that's pencil, not pen anymore. Hopefully we will. But we appreciate you so much. Tell people how they can find your work on social media and the like.
Well, you've got my Twitter handle up there, right up there, at least from my view. It's right up there, right above you. And then Above Bubba is what I do. I call games for them. So you can find my stuff there. And then just say hello. I'm on Instagram as well. I'll have pictures from the ballpark. Since you guys can't be there, I'll take photos from the ballpark for you.
Yeah, be our surrogate for us, please.
Yeah, I'll take pictures from Georgia Southern for you.
Hashtag #PrincipalViews 2021.
2021, you got it.
Sounds good. Corey, man, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it. Love the new view there. And maybe next time you can be like Bubba. You can just change venues wherever you are.
I'm gonna be outside next time. Like I'll just be in the car. Like, you know, I'll just and I won't tell you where I am. You have to guess.
All right, that sounds good. Appreciate you, buddy. Have a good night, and can't wait for the beginning of the season.
See you guys.
All right, have a good night. All right, Corey Glore there. Appreciate him very much. As always, a good friend. He's been with us. He's actually been with us since the very beginning of the show, Bubba, right about the time I met you. So hard to believe that starting with us around May, 2 months after we started the show. So thanks to him. Appreciate it. His friendship means a lot, just like yours and Kyle's. And I guess Kyle went to sleep. So we miss Kyle very much. But we'll let him get some rest. And, you know, Bubba, our next guest is just legendary. Love the guy.
Yeah, we've had this guy on the program numerous times. Very knowledgeable about numerous topics. But in this specific case, we're having him on to talk college basketball as we're, you know, getting toward the month of February and March Madness. And even though it's going to be a much different March Madness, we hope. after not having it last year. We'll be thankful to have the Field of 68 all taking place in Indiana. You know, and I know this is something I'm pretty sure you talked about with Mike. Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News have not had the opportunity to hear this yet, as this was recorded early on Tuesday morning. But, you know, you're going to have games at Lucas Oil Stadium, but then also Ball State, IUPUI, Indiana, Butler, at least those five sites, if not more. So it's going to be very interesting, and fingers crossed that everything will go as planned, as much as possible, and allow us to get the big dance in this year. But without any further ado, let's go ahead and go to that conversation that we had earlier on Tuesday with Michael DeCourcy of the Sporting News.
Well, when we have this guy on, it means college basketball. He's one of our favorite guests coming back with us in another crazy year. I'll be glad we can talk about just basketball and not COVID and basketball with us with the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network is Mike DeCourcy. Mike, how are you?
I am doing very well, David. How are you?
Doing great. Crazy times we're living in. It seems like it's just a win to do basketball. When I was coaching, just to get my team to the gym when it was a away game was a win. It feels that way right now with COVID. With all the, you know, I was telling people, we used to live in a pen world. Now we live in a pencil world because we're having to erase everything and change everything out of the gate. What's your assessment as far as first with COVID, with college basketball? How do you think we're doing?
I think under the circumstances and given the more restrictive protocols for basketball than were in place for football. In football, there were a lot of circumstances. Maybe your tight end tests positive, so they make sure, okay, keep him away and anybody he's contacted away, and then they go ahead and play. And in this case, in basketball, because of the nature of the sport, kind of contact everybody. So if somebody tests positive, you got to make sure everybody goes away, which means you can't play. And so for particular teams, that's been highly problematic. St. Louis is one that has been off the floor. After a terrific start for the Billikens, they've been off the floor now for, I think, more than a month, and it's been a shame. We just had Villanova, which had a great start, just get back and play after nearly a month away, get back and play two games, both victories last week, and hopefully that'll continue. Michigan, which is off to an amazing start and one of the best teams in the country, has now been asked by its state to take a pause, and they are currently on pause. Their athletes are asking for them to go back basically to the protocols that were in place before, suggesting that this is an overreaction, so to speak, to shut them down because one of the athletes, and we don't know whether it was in basketball or another sport, tested positive for a variant of COVID that people are concerned about, and understandably, but they're saying there's no reason why we need to be under the same under these extreme protocols as opposed to what we'd already had in place and had been working for us. I don't think that Michigan had missed a game in basketball.
Wow.
On its own. Now, again, this test may have been in their program. It may not have been. They never, to my knowledge, have indicated what sport that circumstance developed out of. But I don't believe Michigan had missed a game because of COVID concerns in its own program, and maybe hadn't missed any games because they've played a pretty full schedule up until this last circumstance, which will take them out of playing Indiana this week and who knows beyond.
I promise for our viewers and listeners, we'll get to basketball in just a second. Very excited and happy to hear. I believe we're going to have a tournament this year, Mike, and it's in your backyard. So I wanted to give you the floor. Obviously, we love having you on talking college basketball. How do you feel about the so-called bubble in Indianapolis?
Well, I'm very enthused about the fact that they're going to have a tournament, and I think they're doing it very, very wisely. I think they've been really smart about how they've constructed this. There have been suggestions, and worthwhile suggestions, that there are other places they could have done it, Las Vegas, for instance. And I think what's missing from that criticism, if we want to call it that, is an absence of understanding that in order for the NCAA to do this as efficiently as possible, to put on a tournament that basically is a flip of the light switch tournament, so to speak. You had nothing. You had no infrastructure. You had no plan. And now you're having to turn the entire thing on in 4 months. That's really a difficult undertaking. And so being able to do it here in Indianapolis, where all the people who are working on this project are based, it takes reams of complication out of it for them. Having anything that comes up in one of the venues that needs to be addressed, whether it's Bankers Life or Hinkle or Assembly Hall or Mackey, they can get in a car, drive over, and deal with it if it needs in-person concern. And so you couldn't do that in Vegas. You couldn't do that anywhere else. And so that's part of why it is so logical here. And plus, we do have great basketball venues in the city. Bankers Life Fieldhouse may be the best basketball arena of any NBA arena in the country. It's set up for that. It was built for that. They don't play hockey there. They play, and so that's perfect. And Hinkle, of course, you know, if it's good enough for Hoosiers, it's good enough for double A's. And then of course stadium domes, Lucas Oil Stadium is terrific for that. And so all of these have been vetted before, have been used before, in some way, shape, or form, and it's going to be a very effective event. And they came out with the calendar for the tournament last week, and I was really excited to see what they were doing. They are delaying the start of the tournament by a bit because they need to get everybody to Indianapolis. They need to get them set up in hotels. It's not really a true bubble, but it's going to be pretty much what they're calling it is a controlled environment. They're going to limit contact with the outside world during the event for those who are remaining participants. And so they need to get everybody established, so they're not starting the tournament until Thursday with the first four. Then the round of 64 will start on Friday and then go on from there. And the Sweet 16 games, the one element of this that really excites me, the Sweet 16 games will be played on Saturday and Sunday, March 27th and 28th. We're used to the calendar that gives you the Sweet 16 on Thursday and Friday, and we've kind of made peace with the idea that the last time we had this in 2019, the last Sweet 16 games that we've had played were Friday night's second window, and the two games that were going on at the same time were Duke versus Virginia Tech and Kentucky versus Houston. And they both were basically one possession games almost pretty much all the way through the second half. They were both, you can't stop watching this game. Oh, but there's another one just like it over here. So if you're a Kentucky fan, Duke fan, Tech fan, Houston fan, not a hard choice. But if you're not a fan of those teams, which one do you watch? Well, now on that Saturday and Sunday in the Sweet 16, it's game one, game two, game three, game four, game one, game three, game four, all sequential. You can watch them all. You don't have to make any choices. I think that Saturday and Sunday have the potential to be the two best days in the history of NCAA tournament watching.
Wow. And that's, speaking of the tournament from a financial standpoint, my understanding off the top of my head, I think it was $600 million they lost last year, Mike, with I guess that's the TV revenue. As far as the NCAA is concerned, I want to use your brain, bigger picture, more than just college basketball. How can these programs across the country with the Olympic sports, how can they recover when we've lost, you know, that money last year? Is there something we can do, like the NCAA, letting them borrow money, like some of the conferences? I know the Pac-12 had talked about with football, they were going to try to do that if some of the teams needed or the athletic programs needed money. But how can some of these programs, because if not, some of these Olympic sports, or maybe a lot of them, are going to be gone in the next year or two?
My disappointment in some circumstances, and using Stanford as an example, Stanford doesn't have financial problems and yet moved to eliminate multiple sports from their athletic department about 5-6 months ago, using the pandemic sort of as cover so to speak, in my opinion, to make changes. Others did that too. I wrote a column about that relative to Cincinnati soccer. Cincinnati men's soccer was one of the first major school athletic programs to be eliminated. And look, in some cases, the Cincinnati soccer program didn't have a huge reason to exist, to be honest. And there wasn't very much interest in it relative to the campus, relative to the community. They drew in their last season 6,800 fans. That's not average. That's cumulative.
Oh, my God.
I understand that some of it is about the athlete. It's a big part of it is the athlete. But if there's no benefit to the university community of you spending lots and lots of money to have this athletic team, then what's the point of the athletic team? Wouldn't it be more wouldn't it be more worthwhile to the university community to take that money and invest it in intramural sports that anyone could participate in, rather than to address the needs of 20 athletes, say 25, whatever the number was on the roster at the University of Cincinnati men's soccer. And so you could say the same about Stanford sailing, which is one of the programs they eliminated. I mean, we don't desperately need to have a Stanford sailing team. But I do think that there is value in particular circumstances to having these athletic programs. And they are valuable to the people who are participating, to the alumni who participated. And I think that in those instances where particular programs are in jeopardy, I do think the alumni need to step forward and say, hey, this matters to us. We care about this. What do we need to do to keep it? And I think that's important. But I don't think that we're going to lose a lot of athletic programs that are of commanding interest to their campus communities, let alone the public at large. I just, like I said, 6,800 fans over a year is not a lot. And I understand it's not just about attendance, but if you've got 40,000 students on campus, if you're not even getting one person one time. Like if it was 40,000, like it would represent at least the entire student body went to one game theoretically. Maybe you have some interest, but you got less than barely 10%. And so I when I wrote it, I felt like it matters to the players. If it matters enough to the alumni, then they have to agitate with the university athletic department and the university at large. And if it doesn't matter enough to do that, then it doesn't matter enough.
Let's talk college basketball. That's why we wanted to have you on. And again, everybody get the vaccine, because I've had both vaccines. I want everybody vaccinated, because it's been really hard for me. One more thing with COVID. I watch like you do. I watch maybe not as much as you do, but I wish I had more time where I could. I watch a lot of college basketball. It's been really difficult, not because I don't love the game, but to watch it without fans. It's been really hard. I know it's got to be hard for the players and the coaches, but what is your take on the game itself? Looks like it's still good. It's just when that guy has an amazing dunk and the crowd would go crazy, or a guy has a game-winning a buzzer beater, or takes a really big shot to take the lead, the place goes nuts. Well, now you don't have that anymore.
I will be honest with you. First of all, I wish you had called me so I could have been next in line behind you when you got your shots. I'm disappointed in that. But I will say that as someone who watches fans, as watches sports as a fan as well, as particularly those who follow me on Twitter know, I'm a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. I would have liked for them to have some representation from the public at their playoff game, some representation. But honestly, I'm more concerned when I watch a game and I see fans in the stands who are paying little to no attention to concerns about COVID, then I'd rather see an empty arena.
Right.
I want this to be gone, and I want us to be able to go back to sitting next to one another and enjoying this communal experience that we all have in the past and wish we could get back to. I want it to be gone. So when I watch the Steelers, I didn't pay much attention at all. I want to know, what play they calling, or is it going to be blocked right? When the Steelers lost the Browns game, I was just as disappointed in that result as I would have been if there were 68,000 fans there. And so when I watch college basketball, I'm laser focused on what am I seeing on the floor? Who's defending the screen and roll properly? Who's taking good shots? I'm really less concerned about what's in the stands. As someone who loves the experience of going to games, and I pay, like a lot of people think that sports writers just go to the games they get paid to go to. I've paid to go to NBA games, NHL games, Major League Baseball games, and NFL games, all within the past 3 years, every one of those leagues. So I do, and I enjoy it greatly, and I want to get back to that. But the game is where it is for me. That's the beginning and end. And so if I am to consume it through television, I'm not really concerned about who's there other than the 5 or 11 or 6 or whatever sport you're 9 in baseball that are on the field.
Talk about as far as what you've seen so far, I would say that not because you're on, I think the best conference is the Big Ten. As far as looking around the country, would you argue against me that the Big Ten, I know you get paid for the Big Ten network there, but I really like what I've seen. A really deep conference looks like so far.
It is. I think the difference between the Big Ten and the Big 12, Big 12 is fantastic at the top. And that top goes all the way down to 7 teams. But that you have 30% of the teams that are either marginally or not competitive. And in the Big Ten, you really only have one team that is marginally competitive, and that's Nebraska. Everybody else is highly competitive. And so that's the difference. And you're talking about 14 teams. So look at the percentage there. 13 out of 14 highly competitive. Big 10, Big 12, 70%, 7 out of 10, highly competitive. And so you get, if you are able to complete the double round robin, you get two nights where if you don't win against Iowa State and Kansas State, then it's totally on you. They're going to try. K-State and Iowa State are going to try. But if you don't bring a B to, B minus effort, it's on you. In the Big Ten, if you bring a B to B minus effort against anybody but Nebraska, you're losing. I mean, you have to be B plus or above to have a chance to win every night. And that's what separates this Big Ten from almost any league I've seen. The only experience in college basketball, and I've been at this for 35 years in covering college basketball, the only league that I was around that was anywhere close to this was the Big East in 1991. That year, Boston College was young but talented. I think that was Billy Curley's freshman year. I believe maybe Howard Eisley's freshman year. They were going to be very good, and they became very good in a couple of years. But that year, they were all freshmen, and they were all mostly losing. And everybody else in the league, all 8 teams were highly competitive, and 7 of them made the NCAA tournament that year. That still is the record for the greatest percentage of a conference membership to get into the tournament. And for the Big Ten to top that, would be they'd have to get 11 this year because they have 14 members. And I think it's possible. The math is hard on it because people beat people. They beat each other, and ultimately, maybe put themselves in a spot where a Rutgers might not have a good enough record, or Indiana or Maryland. Somebody might not have enough wins to get in. But right now, my most recent bracket, I had 10 in, and Maryland was very close. Maryland's only problem, they have good enough wins, but they don't have enough distance between themselves and 500. They're only one game over 500 against Division I competition. They played a D3 or somebody like that as well. And so there's never been a team that's made the NCAA tournament at one game over 500. Whether or not they can break that, that this may be the year because of the pandemic and shortened schedule and all that. But I think what the committee would like to see is Maryland get the 2-3 games over, and then they don't have to worry about setting a precedent.
One of the things with the Blue Bloods, especially we're an ACC country in the state of North Carolina, with the Tar Heels and Blue Devils, do they get in? Or how do you feel about that? That's kind of like one of the things that people have been talking about around here.
I think it'll be hard for North Carolina to not get in some ways. I mean, if they just play about the way they've played to this point, they'll get in. And honestly, I think they're starting to accelerate a little. I think they'll play better in February than they have to this point. They're still going to lose some games because their perimeter shooting isn't great. But I think they're starting to find a little more confidence, a little bit more cohesion, a little bit more of a formula to be successful. And so I don't have a lot of doubt about Carolina. Duke, I still think, has a good enough team to get in. I think they're capable. One of the things that happened to both Duke and Kentucky was the shortened schedule with such freshman heavy rosters really affected them. They lost the Gardner-Webb game. They didn't lose the Gardner-Webb game went away. The Elon game went away. The Charleston Southern game went away. They tried to reschedule Gardner-Webb. It went away. And that cost them opportunities to get some flow, some formula, some belief, some confidence. That's so such an important part of college basketball that people don't always appreciate. And especially with a freshman-oriented team, it became even more problematic for them. And so now they're in a conference. They've lost three in a row. All are good teams. They haven't been quite good enough to get over the finish line. And they were in all of those games, Virginia Tech, Pitt, Louisville, all three on the road. They were in every one of them. So now they have an opportunity here. Their next few games, Georgia Tech, Clemson, both at home at Miami. Clemson's good, very hard to play against, but their offense just doesn't support a great defense, and so they're beatable. Georgia Tech, very good. You have to play well to beat them, but it's a home game, should provide some comfort level. And then at Miami is a team that's not been – they've been one of those teams where if you don't pay attention, you can lose. But if you bring a good effort, you usually are going to prevail. And so this is an opportunity now for Duke at this point to try to assert itself. Here's what we're going to be. And if it doesn't happen in these next three games, it's probably not. I mean, they may get better and they may finish strong, but they won't wind up with the kind of record necessary to get into the NCAA. So I'm not saying they have to win all three. Three would be really nice for them if they can get them all, because it would also provide some quality. Right now, they don't have any quality wins. And this Georgia Tech, Clemson would give them probably two quad two wins more than they have now. So this is a very important stretch.
One of the nice stories, I know you're time limited, so we'll get that. But as far as Alabama is concerned, what a nice story with them. I was looking, and I'll tell you how crazy it is. I was like, this is a pandemic year, not picking on them. We always think about them for college football. I looked again. I was like, they're number nine this week? They're number nine? I know they've had a great season, but I'm really happy for them. I was just really shocked to see them in the top 10.
Well, they started out the season a little slow. They're sort of adjusting to a new group and new roles and that sort of thing, but they want to play a very up-tempo offense. They want to play a very perimeter-oriented offense, a lot of three-pointers. And I looked it up. I do several programs in Kentucky on a regular basis. And so when they played against Kentucky, and I think it was on the 12th, so literally like 2 weeks ago, before that game, they were shooting somewhere around 31.2% from three-point range. And they were still taking a lot of them. I mean, they were still averaging 20 plus threes a game. They were going to try to beat you by making you play differently than the way you play. And they weren't that successful at it to that point. They were reasonably successful. I think they were probably 6-3, 7-3, something like that. But from that day on, they have shot the basketball at a ridiculous rate. And in terms of volume of attempts and volume of makes, they've gone all the way from 31 36.2 or so to 36.1, I believe it is now. And that kind of escalation in a mid-season shooting percentage is almost unprecedented. It just doesn't happen. And they have become so so confident and so accurate now that opponents can't stay with them. And it's really hard to defend when your brain says the guy's at 28 feet. That's not a shot I got to worry about. If I go out and run at him, he's going to be past me and all the way to the goal, and I have no chance. And so they let him shoot, and the ball goes in, and it's so you have to completely rewire your brain to play against Alabama right now, and that's not easy to do when you've got another opponent two, three days later that doesn't do anything like Alabama. In some ways, it's like the inverse of playing against the Syracuse zone. Syracuse, you come up against that zone, and it's not like anything anybody else does. When they get it really good, it's really hard to go against. And 2 days, 3 days, you're going to play somebody that plays man-to-man. And so how do you rewire your brain for that? And it's right now, it's the same thing for Alabama on offense. You have to completely relearn how to guard. You have to completely rethink what you're worried about. College defenders, and to a slightly lesser extent, pro defenders, are concerned first with the ball going to the lane. If the ball goes to the lane, we got a problem. And so they constrict. And that's Alabama uses that against you. That's 100%, almost 100% their plan, which is use that mentality against the opposition. Force them to react to my initial move and then give them the payoff, that shot from 24 feet.
Before we let you go, any surprises? I know you've been generous with your time to carve out some time with us this morning, but any surprises this year that maybe some storylines as far as teams that you didn't expect to do well and all of a sudden, like the Alabama we just talked about?
Well, you know, I'd probably start in terms of teams that have excelled. Missouri is one. And I'm not surprised they're good. I mean, they got a bunch of veteran players. Their whole team almost is guys who've been together forever. But they, for various reasons, mostly because they've had injury problems, they've been together, one guy in street clothes, and they're not winning games. Now they've all been healthy all year, and they've been fantastic. Only two losses, one of which they were dominating Mississippi State. I think it was on the road, but they were up 17, 18 points and let it get away from them. And the other one, they were beaten badly at home by Tennessee, a loss they avenged on the road last Saturday. They have had one of the really great success stories of this season in terms of being able to now be healthy, and now you can see what they're capable of. So that's been really cool. I've enjoyed watching them. Florida State is another team I marvel at. They had two guys taken in the top 15 of the 2020 draft. And you'd think that a team that loses two lottery picks, you know, what do they have left? And instead, they're honestly better. And they were really good last year, but I think they're better now. And no one wants to seem to acknowledge it. And they were unranked a week ago. I have them as a 3 seed on my bracket.
Wow.
They're fantastic. And yet the voters in the polls aren't buying them. I'm not sure why. Scotty Barnes is one of the best freshmen in the country. And like most Florida State players, if not all of them, he has been willing to accept not a smaller role, but a smaller window, I guess you'd call it. They get fewer minutes. They play 11 guys, 10 guys. They are able to get those guys basically. I compare it to hockey a little bit. You play your shift. You give it all. You're all during your shift. Then the whistle blows and they take you out. And in hockey, you get to go out while the whistle's still. You don't have to wait for a whistle. It's everything else is the same because that concept allows Florida State to be fresher than you, more energetic than you. They don't have maybe as much team chemistry in terms of the flow of the basketball or whatever, but they make smart plays. They do basic things on offense and they do them well, and they force you into bad matchups, and they attack those bad matchups more so than maybe a team that's based on flow and chemistry and that sort of thing. Because you never, you don't always know who you're going to be playing with at Florida State, but you know you're going to be playing. And you better, if you play hard, you're going to get back out there and play again. And Leonard's ability to get those guys to buy into that and not into the, oh, I'm not getting enough minutes idea. It's really impressive, and it's produced, it produced a terrific team that a year ago, if we'd had a tournament, would have been a dangerous Final Four threat with those two guys I mentioned. That is back again, and I think we'll, with Barnes at the forefront, we'll be a threat to make it to the Final Four as well.
It'll be interesting, and I'm glad that, that we're having the tournament in your backyard. It's going to be fantastic. I cannot wait. Thank goodness for having, that was one of the most depressing times. No ECU baseball and no tournament was really, really rough for me. Before we let you go, how can people find your work? And thank you again for coming on. It means a lot to us.
Well, you can find my work at TSN Mike on Twitter to read what I write. Also, Big Ten Network on Saturdays. I am on the pregame show every week and from now until the end of the regular season. And on Fox Sports, fairly regularly, I appear on pre- or post-game shows to discuss the bracket that I select for them, and as well as doing insider reports for Inside the Big East, which is a regular weekly program on Fox Sports. And if you want to find my bracket every Monday and Friday, usually posted early afternoon, Monday and Friday, CBB on Fox is their Twitter handle. I think it might also be their Instagram, but I'm not an Instagrammer, so I don't know for sure. That's the same. Pretty sure it's the same handle, but you can definitely find it on Twitter at CBB on Fox.
Mike, enjoy the visit. Look forward to maybe have you back on before the tournament to talk about the tournament. But thanks again for your time, and look forward to the rest of the college basketball season. Enjoy the visit. Thanks, man.
Absolutely. You take care. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, glad to do it. You take care. We'll talk to you.
See you later.
All right. Mike DeCourcy there, the Sporting News. Appreciate him very much. Bubba, great show. I know we've been running a little bit long tonight, but certainly thanks to our great guests. And by the way, I want to mention to our folks, one of the things we're very excited about around here is 23 Jungle Tales, your brainchild, Bubba. And I know we have some more coming up. And plus, we want to give our great shout out to our great friend Mark Minakazi, pgxgloves.com. Bubba, I'm telling you, they've got everything up there. I bought three shirts from them. Obviously, one is 23 Jungle Tales. He's got a cool 23 Jungle Tales. It's got the logo you see up there on the screen. If you can't see it, then you definitely need to go to pgxglove.com. And I go there. I bought a couple t-shirts. My kids love the logo with the lion on it. So make sure that for all you folks, go to pgxgloves.com. Bubba, they have, how about, for example, they have the baseball gloves. They have the custom baseball gloves. They have batting gloves. They have football gloves, golf gloves. We have talked to our good friend Terry Gallagher, who is a big golfer. We need to get him to go to pgxgloves.com. Lots of great swag, and make sure that you do so. Go to, again, pgxgloves.com. Thanks for the sponsorship, our very first sponsor, and that's by Pirate Great Mark Minakazi. Good old Kaz helped us out, and I appreciate him very much for stepping up and sponsoring 23 Jungle Tales.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I really appreciate Kaz and PGX Gloves, and here in just a moment, I'll show you something that I got in the mail yesterday.
All right,
so... Nice pirate golf glove there. And then also some of his other swag.
Love it. Yeah, I want to get me one. I saw that. I want to get that. I got the shirt on the way. We'll order some more stuff this weekend.
Unfortunately, this doesn't fit my big noggin. So either as Riley will wear it or maybe my dad, but somebody will certainly be wearing this PGX gloves lid, and Kaz is gonna hook me up. He's gonna order a hat that will fit my big 7 3/4 head, and then put his logo on it for me. So look forward to that. Love that logo.
Nice stuff. I think I'm 7 5/8, so I'm right there. I'm right there with you on a big head. I'll tell you what, very good show tonight as always. Bubba, I know with we've got 23 Jungle Tales. We'll have overtime Thursday night. I know we got a big show as well.
Yeah, we do. On Thursday, we'll be catching up with Kelly Hines from the Tulsa World and Pirates. We'll be playing the Golden Hurricane on Saturday at Williams Arena, Minji's Coliseum. And then also on Thursday, we may potentially have Kaz, Mark Minakazi of PGX Gloves, and we'll see. That's still to be determined. And who am I leaving out, Dave?
Terry Gallagher is going to join.
Of course, Bunk. So Bunk will join us, but I thought there was somebody in addition to Terry. Maybe I'm got so many guests in my head right now.
Next Tuesday, David Glenn.
Yeah, David Glenn. That's what I was thinking about. David Glenn next Tuesday.
And I know with 23 Jungle Tales, we'll have that. And plus, by the way, fans, before I forget, Bubba, we've been doing so much stuff. I know you've got a lot of work tomorrow, but Bubba and I last year teamed up and we decided about the North Carolina Division I preview. It went very, very well, thanks to the gentleman right there behind the scenes. Bubba works really hard and turned out great. And this year, Bubba, I know that it's off to a great start. A lot of the coaches coming on once again. And today I had a chance to interview a great coach at North Carolina Central.
Yeah, you had the opportunity this morning to catch up with a guy that's been at North Carolina Central for about a decade now since they made that move to Division I, Jim Kerner, excellent coach. Mm-hmm. That's a tough job. I'm not trying to talk down about those guys, but just being honest, that's a tough job.
Yeah.
And he's done an excellent job. He's had a winning season. He's been right there on the verge of having some more. And we'll be very interesting to see how not only the Eagles do, but, you know, just to follow Coach Kerner's career path over the coming years. But, yeah, definitely go online and go to YouTube and also our Facebook page and check that out. As you see here on the screen, I did not have that one uploaded, but definitely check that out. And there'll be 17 more to come as we talk to every head baseball coach in the state of North Carolina in the Division I ranks.
Going to be fantastic. Thank you to all the coaches and the sports information directors. They're great people to work with. College baseball is so special with all those guys and the access they give us. So including Malcolm Gray at East Carolina. So appreciate all the help that we've been getting over the years, the last few years of the podcast. March 1st, by the way, Bubba, as you know, is our anniversary, 3 years. So had a lot of success over the years with our SIDs. Appreciate them very much. And appreciate your hard work. I know that we've got a lot of things coming up. Want to remind fans, coming up, as a matter of fact, tomorrow night, hard to believe it's already, man, Wednesday, we have at UCF, and that's tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, ESPN Plus, 6:30 on Learfield IMG College with Jeff Charles and Cy Seymour. If you want the radio call, like I like to have both, so I know you may do as well, but look forward to that. All right, for our great guest, Bubba, if you don't have anything, then Kyle from LaGrange Barber, Sleeping Kyle. Appreciate him. Obviously, we want to thank Corey Gloria, play-by-play voice of the ECU Pirates baseball team, and Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network. And for all of us right here, good night, everybody, and go Pirates.